You paren when it starts. I know you got smarts. Zipping up my bits, I'm a bandwidth shop. Can your browser store cache? Nah, you need mine, cause I'm a download hardware motherboard running with your Ajax.
Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee, at Lady Lee on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.com.
Your first line of code needs a node constructor.
We are so excited to have Justin, who is a Google developer expert, interviewing Rob Dodson of Polymer today. So Justin, do you want to go ahead and quickly introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Justin Ribeiro. I am a Google developer expert. I get to work on web technologies and all kinds of awesome stuff with folks like the Polymer team. So welcome everybody.
Thanks, Justin. We're really excited to have you. And Rob, do you want to go ahead and tell us what you've been up to?
Yeah. So I'm Rob Dodson. I'm a developer advocate here at the Googles. And I work, I'm actually a web developer advocate, so I kind of span a few different things, but my primary focus at the moment is web components and Polymer.
And I just saw you guys did a recent release, correct?
Yeah, so Polymer, let's see, I think it was 1.3.0 just went out, or at least the release notes and everything just went out recently. So that is our current latest and greatest version.
Rob, it's good to talk to you. Good to see you, buddy. How's things?
Yeah, good to virtually see you. Yeah, it's good, man.
So hey, let's talk some web components to kick us off here. So, you know, web components has gone through a lot of phases over the years. And recently, last year, we had the big conflict resolution, basically talking about sort of the parts that weren't so loved in terms of the specification. And we've got a lot of agreement, but you know, things like Shadow DOM and everything else. Are we all the way there yet? Are all the browser manufacturers now sort of seeing the light when it comes to web components?
So for the most part, yeah. To recap for anyone who hasn't been following the web component stuff super close, there are four different standards that kind of make up web components. There's template, Shadow DOM, custom elements, and HTML imports. And each one of them sort of has their own level of support in the different browsers. So template at this point is shipping everywhere. I think last year, maybe it was Edge, was the last browser to ship template. So that's good, right? One of the four checked off. Shadow DOM was definitely super contentious, but after many sort of rounds of the different browser makers getting together and having like face-to-face meetings and sort of hashing out the contentious bits, everyone is now on board with Shadow DOM. It's shipping in WebKit behind a flag. It's also behind a flag in Firefox, and the Edge team have said on their blog that they plan to work on it and implement it as well. So that's really awesome. Next up was sort of custom elements. Custom elements, also everyone's on board with that. They've been having face-to-face meetings. There was one that actually happened, I want to say like maybe a month ago. Again, just sort of hashing out the contentious bits. And when I say the contentious bits, I mean it's pretty like in the weeds stuff. It's like at what point during the micro task is the constructor gonna run? So it's not like these big things where it's like, are we even gonna do this? It's more like really, really fine-grained detail of like how are we going to do this? And again, everyone's on board with that as well. And so I sort of expect in 2016 we'll probably see both Shadow DOM and custom elements start shipping in some other browsers. And then the last one is HTML imports. And HTML imports has definitely had kind of a rough childhood, if you want to call it that. You know, remains to be the most contentious of the four. It's shipping in Chrome and Opera, but it is not currently shipping in other browsers. And the folks in Mozilla have publicly said that they wanted to wait to see where ES6 modules sort of ended up before spending a lot of time on that. And I think what has happened recently is Dmitry Glazkov, who works here at Chrome and has spent a lot of time on these web component standards, basically put out a proposal to see if we could rethink HTML imports on top of the ES6 module system or the ES2015 module system, maybe even rebranding it as something like HTML modules, and basically just teach the module loader that along with loading JavaScript, it could also load HTML using sort of the same underlying technology. And then we could still have a declarative version in markup if we want. And then we can also have kind of like an imperative version in script. So that, I think, is sort of the last big chunk of the puzzle to be sorted. And there's an upcoming face-to-face. I don't know the exact timing of when, but there's an upcoming face-to-face to sort of hash that out and see where that goes.
And for web developers, this has been a long time coming. It's been, you know, almost 4 or 5 years now before the specs have sort of come together. So it's nice to see that browser vendors are sort of on board with this. Everyone is at least having the conversation now to sort of resolve these problems so that we as developers sort of get these wonderful features in our browser.
Yeah, that's the main thing. I think for a long time we were nervous that some folks were just going to be like, you know what, nope, like, like we appreciate the work, but no. And so it's awesome that everyone is on board and actually that we're having these face-to-face meetings. It's kind of cool when you see how these things really go down. Like everybody who works on it, they're friends. Like they all, like we all work at different companies, but we're all like friends. And so you have these face-to-face meetings and they're actually like pretty, like decent events, right? Like everyone's like, you know, nice and not like throwing chairs or anything like that. And really everyone's just aiming to solve these problems and figure out, yeah, like how can we get these things into developers' hands?
And for developers out there now who want to use these things, we do have we have polyfills currently that allow sort of bridge our gap as we would normally do when browsers haven't necessarily caught up to the spec yet, correct?
Yeah, so there's polyfills for Shadow DOM and custom elements and imports and everything. That all comes with Polymer. We have like sort of a separate file that we ask people to download called Web Components Lite.js. And the thing about it is, it's like, it's awesome. It's cool that these things can even be polyfilled whatsoever, but there are limitations to what polyfills can do. And so it can be frustrating to work with them at times. You know, you're trying to polyfill some feature of style scoping in CSS, and it's not 100% perfect. And so I think that's, you know, one of the reasons why web components have had sort of slow adoption is that the polyfills really had to, they were sort of baking, the specs were changing, and the feature set was always like 85% of what was promised, and I think that was really frustrating for folks. So it's one of the reasons why I'm excited to see these things ship in other browsers, because it means we can actually start sort of shedding some of these polyfills, getting rid of them, and just have it be like, you know, a native tool that everyone can benefit from.
Boop. So you mentioned Polymer. Now, Polymer, a lot of people want to call Polymer a framework for web components, which usually results in me coughing and going, it's not a framework. But, you know, in terms of, it is built on the standard. It uses these new specifications and these new features that are coming to our browsers, if not already there, in things like Chrome. Why isn't Polymer sort of a framework, and why should developers sort of care about that?
Yeah, so I think if you look at all the tools that are out there today, you've got, or the sort of the big tools for building applications, you got Angular and Ember, which fall very much into the framework category. And you've got things like Polymer and React, which tend to be more like self-branded as libraries. And I think it, you know, has to do with the scope of what the particular tool is trying to do. So Polymer, right, it really, really, really just wants to be a little bit of sugar on top of these native standards. And as much as we can remove bits of Polymer and replace it with native functionality, we absolutely want to do that so that it can be as absolutely small as possible. Whereas, you know, you look at something like Ember, and I'm, by the way, I'm not trying to knock on Ember. It's just like sort of a different worldview of how to build an application. But something like Ember, they're trying to have kind of like this holistic system, where it's going to be like, this is how your routing is going to work, this is how your models are going to work, this is how your templates are going to get loaded in, and here we're going to do every single step of the entire process for you. And deviating from that in any way is going to be painful. And so these are just, I guess, two different ways of thinking about things. And what we want to do is make web components ultimately just like a universal tool. Like, I would love to see people using web components, be they built with just, you know, vanilla JavaScript or a library like Polymer or another one like Xtag. Be able to use those with other frameworks even, if they want to, like to be able to drop them into an Angular application or Ember application, and that the file size on these libraries would be so tiny that people would not see that as like cost prohibitive. Because ultimately, I think it'd be great if all these tools out there were using the native thing to build their components. If they kind of got out of the component business and and let the platform kind of do that for them, and focus instead on things like, you know, routing, loading data, and stuff like that, where I think they still are super strong.
There is this sort of shift. Like, I know that the frameworks, you know, initially there was a lot of, oh, we don't really do web components, but now, like, that's a thing. Like, Ember will work with web components in the more current versions. Things like, a lot of people think that, you know, React and Polymer or web components in general can't work together, but they actually have commits in there as well for that. So there is this very nice ecosystem that's sort of developing where pieces that were hard initially, a lot of that can be done by the browser and the sort of specifications and this, like, sort of extensible web that sort of in our horizon at this point.
Yeah, totally. Again, when some of these things start shipping natively, that story becomes more compelling for developers. I think the problem that we've had right now is, I did a talk a while back where I was trying to use Polymer with Angular 2. And Angular 2 is trying to take advantage of some of the web component features, and Polymer is trying to take advantage of some of the web component features, but both of them are trying to, like, polyfill them at the same time. And so you end up in this weird, uncanny valley of, like, two polyfills running at once, right? And that just leads to, like, unpredictable stuff happening. But, you know, when that goes away, when it's just relying on the native functionality, then I think that whole interop thing will become a little bit more clear. My hope is that we'll actually start seeing more people building web components because they're like, well, you know, I needed to build a date picker, and I could have built one that was bespoke to a framework, or I could just build this, like, universal one that, like, anyone can use. So I sort of, you know, we spent a lot of time using jQuery plugins back in the day. And then to me, like, I see it as, like, a next sort of logical progression that, like, that ecosystem would sort of evolve into web components, where it's like, here's these things. They run, you know, anywhere, really, right? Like, you can drop a jQuery plugin into, like, any sort of app, and ideally it should be able to run. I'd like to see us progress to that same way as web components, so we don't have, like, 1,000 date pickers or 1,000 drop-down menus or anything like that.
There are places out there now, things like, you know, Component Kitchen and places like that, where you do see a lot of web components sort of in the development stages of things. Even Polymer themselves has things like Paper and then, you know, the upcoming sort of app layout stuff, where the things that were hard that we tried to sort of make work with jQuery, and it wasn't jQuery's fault. I think people seem to forget that we didn't have the APIs that allow us to do things like web components back then. We had iframe hacks and, you know, all the things that we used to do to sort of inject and fill across the board. You know, are working with those APIs easier for developers now as they start to become natively filled? Is it there? Can you, as a developer, say, you know what, I'm going to build a component right now today?
So you absolutely can. Like, if you're doing it in Chrome, absolutely. But, you know, for it to work in the other browsers, you will still need the polyfills. But, you know, one thing I think is really, really important that maybe is potentially something that folks miss about the web component stuff is that it's purposefully low level, meaning it requires a fair bit of code to write a component, but that is by design. Like part of the whole extensible web movement was, you know, when browser makers try to make higher level abstractions, and App Cache is a really good example of this, when they try and make a higher level abstraction, we tend to screw it up. Like, the browser makers tend to just, like, really not, like, nail all the use cases that actual developers have. And so the alternative approach is, okay, well, we'll make something that's super low level and leave it kind of up to folks to build libraries on top of. And so, you know, like, if you're building a vanilla web component, that's totally great. But I do think that you'll quickly end up in a place where you've built something almost similar to Polymer, like some abstraction, for doing things like, you know, taking your attributes and serializing them to properties and back and forth, like little things like that. The browser didn't want to have an opinion there so that we could have maximum flexibility. But that does lead us to creating libraries. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think we have to make sure that the libraries are sort of small and svelte and that you can then, you know, use them in other applications, like that they're interoperable and everything like that. So sorry, to answer your question, yeah, you can totally do it. You can write to the native APIs and do that. And that was actually how I learned web components. And I would recommend anybody who wanted to get into web components, go that route. You know, learn what's actually going on under the hood with these things, because then when you use a tool like Polymer or Xtag, you're like, oh, I see where this is removing the pain points for me. you know, I see why, you know, it does template stamping the way it does, or why it does, why it has, like, you know, change watchers for when properties change and stuff like that. You'll realize, like, why those abstractions exist.
And Polymer sort of, you know, as you mentioned, right, it's a library. It has a number of features, and so much of the awesomeness sort of came out 1.0 last year, and now we're sort of moving ahead. We're at version 1.3 as the current release. There's been a lot of fixes, changes. We've got features that continue to land. Polymer makes life quite a bit easier across the board. What are some of those cool features that, you know, you could do vanilla straight away if you wanted to, but that Polymer makes a little bit easier?
So there's like a few things that have happened since 1.0 to where we are now at 1.3. I mean, we keep sort of upticking the minor version because we're adding new features that are still backwards compatible. Some of the ones that sort of like immediately popped to mind. One is we have a system for observing distributed children. So part of Shadow DOM is it gives you this ability to take what we often call light DOM children and distribute them or project them into different parts of the DOM. And this can be really effective if you're building, for instance, like a layout component, and you want to say, okay, well, you know, I have this layout component, and if you put something in here that kind of looks like a header or has like a header class or something, I'm just going to, like, you know, put it up here at the very top. I'm going to project it up there at the top, which is really useful. The hard thing there is figuring out when those children have changed, if someone adds or removes one at runtime. So we built two APIs around that, one called effective children, and which will give you a list of all your effective light DOM children, and another one called observe nodes, which is sort of like a mutation observer, but it can watch for distributed children changing versus current mutation observers, which can only tell if your like actual children have changed. So those are very, very useful APIs. It's a little bit in the weeds, you know, if you're using Polymer a lot, that's the kind of thing that you might be into. Another thing that we added like in the 1.3 release was this idea of creating dynamic computing functions. So you could, for instance, you could have like a library that does internationalization, and you want to have a little data binding that says, okay, well, I have a function called translate, and I take a string, and you know, if my translation service has not loaded yet, like I want my translation service to be a dependency of that translate function, but if it hasn't loaded yet, like I'm not really sure what to do. Like you in previous versions of Polymer, you were kind of stuck. Your translation service could load, and then you'd have to like kick all your computed functions and be like, hey, please run somehow. But in Polymer 1.3, we've made that dynamic now. So you can actually have these functions that have dependencies, and when those dependencies load in, all of your little functions run throughout your element. So again, this is really useful for things like internationalization. It's useful for things like if you have a routing library and you want to create like a function to translate a string to a URL, but maybe your router hasn't loaded in yet. So those are two big features that I think are really awesome. And then the other thing is just like that the library itself has been getting a lot smaller. So I mentioned that kind of like our whole goal is making sure that Polymer to as large a degree as it can, that it just sort of evaporates and gets as close to you just like using native APIs with a little bit of sugar on top. So since like 1.0, we've reduced the size of the library by 20%. So 1.3 is 20% smaller than 1.0 was, which I think is really rad. Like we've got the polyfills down to like 11K now, gzipped, and Polymer itself is down to like 35K gzipped. And you compare that to other, you know, frameworks and libraries out there, and by comparison, Polymer looks, you know, quite small, which, again, is sort of our goal here, is just to keep shrinking it down so anyone can use it anywhere they want.
And there was, you know, there was a lot of claim during the 0.5 days, too, that it was too large. The Shadow DOM polyfill, for instance, was too large, too slow. And a lot of that's changed now. You know, now we don't, you know, we don't generally ship Shadow DOM, right? You use Shady DOM. When not available, you're going to get a lot more speed out of that. And in 2016, you know, you guys just released the big roadmap. And, you know, I know that size is always an ongoing sort of thing, smaller, lighter sort of builds. Mm-hmm. And one of the things on the roadmap is, you know, there is this idea of, you know, customized sort of builds, which we kind of have now with things like light and whatnot. But talk a little bit about that. Like, are we going to get customized builds of Polymer in the future?
Yeah, so this is something like... So we kind of did this thing when we did 1.0 where we relayered Polymer And we were like, we're going to have three layers, Polymer Mini, Polymer Micro, and Polymer Standard. They kind of build on top of each other. So Polymer Standard requires Polymer Mini and Micro. And the idea was that if you wanted to, you could build components that maybe only used Polymer Mini, right? You could build a whole component set that was like super, super svelte. And I think, you know, it was a cool idea, but something that we didn't do a really good job of like encouraging people to do. And even ourselves, like in our own elements, we ended up just using Polymer Standard for everything. So what we're trying to do now is something I would kind of liken it a little bit to maybe if you've used like Lodash recently. Like Lodash, it used to be a big library full of useful utility functions, and now it's sort of gotten to the point where you can say, you know what, I only want like this function from Lodash and this other function from Lodash, right? I only want the union function and the zip function and maybe something else. And so what we want to do with Polymer is sort of move in that direction such that when you're creating an element, there are essentially like little JavaScript things that you can require. You could be like, you know what, I want template stamping and I want the thing that serializes my properties, but I don't need like, I don't need DOM repeat. I don't need DOM if, I don't need your data binding system, you know, like I don't need any of that, right? I just need like a few really tiny things. And we want to make this sort of like first class in Polymer, this idea of only requiring what you need. And going through our own elements, like the paper elements and everything, and sort of doing a refactor on those where it's like, okay, these are only going to require what they need, and we're going to try and shrink them down to make them even smaller, even more svelte, so that folks don't feel like there's a penalty to using a bunch of elements.
And even this idea of using a lot of elements now, I mean, with sort of HTTP2 sort of on the horizon, you know, a lot of the tooling around things may see some shift as well, where, you know, it's never been really easier to ship any amount of elements you may need. I mean, there was always that fear sort of both with payload and the amount of network requests and everything else. And even that, you know, in terms of things like paper and whatnot, you know, there's this sort of mention of app layout, which was started getting worked on last year, and it's sort of also on the roadmap for 2016 in terms of sort of a lighter, not necessarily styled into material way of sort of building things. Could you talk a little bit about app layout and sort of why it got stuck onto the roadmap of things?
Yeah, so app layout is it's a set of layout elements, and the reason why we started creating that was because we found a lot of people have had a hard time differentiating Polymer from material design. Like a lot of folks just see them as one and the same. And it's because they kind of came out at the same time, and Polymer was sort of Google's like reference. Like we used Polymer to build the reference implementation of material design components. And so folks have just always had them sort of lumped together in their brain. Like if I'm building a Polymer app, it's got to look like material design, which is not the case at all. So what we wanted to do was just create some layout elements that we're kind of more generic, I guess. Like, we're a little bit easier to style. We're not tied to material design, really, in any way. And, you know, we're also maybe a bit more composable. Like, some of the material design elements, they were doing quite a lot of fancy stuff with Shadow DOM, and it required you to know a good deal about the custom properties system and things like that to style them, or to override styles. And with the app layout elements, we're just trying to simplify that a lot. And I think the ultimate goal is, you know, maybe to encourage folks to move to the app layout elements if they've been using a lot of the paper elements, and then perhaps, you know, theme them to look paper-like. You know, if you want the exact same material design look, it's like, okay, well, here's like a CSS bundle. Versus having that be like hard-coded into all of the components, and then you have to go in and you've got to like rip all those parts out and be like, no, like my branding looks totally different. You know, I got to like pull all this out and put my stuff in. So yeah, we're just trying to make that a little bit more universal.
And I've been using app layout since it got landed on GitHub, and it's come a long way. Like there's a lot of good things about app layouts, particularly if you want, you know, you don't want to necessarily have to strip branding out of paper, or which is darn near impossible most of the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, app layout works well for that. It gives yet another sort of set of components that you can be used. And there are quite a few sort of component libraries out there. You've got Paper, you've got your Platinum Elements, which do things like Service Worker, and there's a lot of great sets. I'm really fond of Gold, for instance, like Gold for your payment forms and everything. And the thing that I think a lot of developers probably should remember, and I know we talk about this a lot, is they're all fairly composable. Like, you can mix and match to your heart's content the beauty of web components for the most part. Whether it's, you know, something that's out of the Polymer Element library or something out of like things on GitHub. It works rather well.
Yeah, this is something that like I'm trying to encourage more folks to get into. Not necessarily even composing like Polymer Elements together, but finding stuff that's made by the community and throwing that into their apps. We have a site, customelements.io, which is a really great resource for people to go and find web components. The hard part right now is finding the quality ones. You know, there's a lot of stuff that is published on that site where someone did like a little weekend hack, right? And they were just like, oh, it's just sort of messing around and I published this thing. And it's not something you would actually want to use in your project. But what we want to do is get to a place where when people are looking for components, they start at customelements.io. And I think, you know, the reason why this is so important is because the Polymer team itself is still kind of like a relatively small team compared to many teams at Google. I think right now it's about 20 people. The Polymer team is never going to be able to create the full sort of like breadth of web components that we as developers actually need. You know, it's going to be up to sort of all of us. The same way that the NPM ecosystem is just a huge constellation of individuals creating all these useful modules. Like, I think we need to sort of head in that same direction with web components. And so right now, a lot of people look to the catalog of elements that the Polymer team has created. And if that doesn't work for them, they're just like, well, I guess I can't use Polymer, right? Because it's like it's missing a component or one of those components has like a bug or something. What I really want to encourage folks to do is to just think of Polymer just as a library. Like, there happen to be elements that have been created with it, but it's still, at the end of the day, it itself is just a library, and you're empowered to make whatever you want with it, you know? And so I hope to start seeing more sort of community elements popping up and showing up on customelements.io. And for my part, I'm going to try and feature those more on shows like Polycast, whenever I can.
Yeah, it is interesting that, you know, with the way Polymer sort of come out and the way web components have sort of risen, I mean, you do look and see that while there's sort of, maybe we haven't hit the groundswell yet in terms of people pumping out a lot of components, there are projects out there that sort of are working towards this. But you also see a lot of corporations who are actually building component sets for their internal tools, things like Salesforce and GE and places like that, who actually jumped on the bandwagon even before necessarily a lot of the community has, which I find really intriguing.
Yeah, I think it's because for big companies, web components make a lot of sense because it's really, really hard at a company, and I'm talking about a company that has like 10,000, 50,000 employees, right? Some, you know, a huge company like the scale of GE or any big enterprise company. It's hard for them to get everyone on the same stack. Like, they have all these different sub-teams. GE is like a holding company, kind of like Alphabet is now, right? So there's like multiple sub-companies within GE that all uses their own things. And so, you know, for these large companies, they're like, we need a common denominator that everyone can take advantage of. We can't tell everyone use Angular or React or whatever. Like, it just doesn't work because they have teams that are like, you know, they're Java developers who are not comfortable building a big like front end MVC. Like, that's just like not their forte. Their skills are elsewhere. And so for them, like, web components are a really nice, like, good sort of long-term investment because they're like, it's standards based and it'll work for all of our developers, right? Anybody should be able to pull this tag in because it's using these standards. It'll just work for them. So yeah, like it's sort of interesting because you see these huge companies getting really into it a lot earlier than many of the developers out there. And again, my hope is that as other browsers ship and sort of announce that they're shipping these features, you know, when Safari comes out and it's like, we're shipping Shadow DOM, or Firefox comes out and it's like, we're shipping custom elements. I think and I hope that that'll sort of like give the ecosystem a little bit of like a shot in the arm. and folks will be like, okay, you know, maybe this is worth investing in because it really is everywhere now.
You know, we've talked a little bit about the roadmap, but one thing that's actually really big on the roadmap in terms of things to happen in 2016 and sort of the commitment to the future of the web is this talk about building progressive web apps. You know, in terms of sort of the progressive web app sort of revolution, you know, we saw at a Chrome Dev Summit this year. We've seen a lot of different approaches to it in terms of things like App Shell and everything else. What kind of additional sort of components do we need around this concept of progressive web apps? Sort of what is sort of Polymer or the Polymer Element vision of what progressive web apps could be?
Yeah, so I think there's like a few things. You mentioned this idea of like an app shell. And for anyone who hasn't heard of progressive web apps before, the idea is you can sort of, you can pull down kind of like a shell for your application, right? You can think of it like the sort of the main layout for your app, but you don't pull down the content yet. And you pull down that shell and you use a tool like Service Worker to cache the shell. And then you use other technologies like Web App Manifest and Web App Install Banners, which is a new thing that we rolled out in Chrome, to encourage folks, if they want to save that application to their home screen. And so you get this experience where this app kind of evolves sort of like progressively. Like it starts off as a website, and you know, over time you save it to your home screen, you can do notifications with it, and all these other cool things. So the goal of Polymer is like, one, we want to make sure that we can help make this very easy for developers. So using, for instance, app layout as the elements that you build your shell out of, and making it really easy to just like cache a few things. Like it's sort of easier to think of it as like, oh, I have this handful of elements and these are critical to my app. So I will cache this critical set of elements. And then I have this other group over here that's sort of less critical. So I can load those in lazily. And I think components do a good job of sort of forcing you to like factor things in your head that way. And then we also have, as you mentioned, the Platinum Elements, which help with Service Worker. And the Platinum Elements were really interesting because they do totally help with setting up a Service Worker if you've never done it before. At the same time, I think we want to go back and revisit those and maybe improve upon them. They're very cool, and if you're building a smaller application, they're awesome for you. Like I tend to use them for a lot of my demos. But I think, you know, if you are a huge company, like I'm thinking of somebody like The Guardian or New York Times, right? Like if they're building a Service Worker, they probably still want to like hand roll their Service Worker because there's a lot of things they might want to get in there and do. They might really want to fine tune the JavaScript. And right now the Platinum Elements, like they're configurable, but not to that degree. So I think, you know, that's an area that we'll want to focus on. So what you might see is us, you know, putting out progressive web apps that use app layout and maybe other Polymer elements using that sort of, as I mentioned before, that sort of refactored version of Polymer where we can just sort of request the bits that you need. But we might be sort of like hand rolling our Service Workers initially while we sort of think about how we can do like Platinum Elements V2 or something, right? Just how we can make these like really, really flexible for people. Because the Service Worker stuff is sort of constantly evolving and we want to make sure that we evolve with it. And that the elements we produce, you know, give developers, like they feel like they have a lot of power with those elements versus just like, well, it kind of does some of what I want, but not everything.
Yeah, I mean, the Platinum Elements are really good today, in my opinion. But as to your point, yeah, the idea that where you have a lot of different routes or things that you need to sort of handle, you know, it's very easy to sort of pre-cache your app shell and those sort of resources. But when you get down to, you know, how your navigation works and, you know, if I visit that thing, am I caching it or not? Platinum doesn't work so great for that now. So it would be interesting to see sort of what version 2 brings. And if you haven't used Service Worker out there, I highly recommend it. It's really awesome.
Oh, yeah. Service Worker is crazy. Yeah, if you've never used it, I mean, you can use the Platinum Elements just to get you kind of like quickly into it. But yeah, that's like a magical new technology that is going to completely change the way that we, you know, build web applications.
Yeah, and if you're out there and you're, you know, do take a look at Platinum Elements, take a look at Service Worker Toolbox and Service Worker Precache. They're all on GitHub. They're really awesome. All the good things. Boop. And when we talk about things like Platinum and whatnot, I can't help but think about tooling, Rob. Mm-hmm. And tooling today is, you know, sort of, it's there. We have things like Vulkanize. We've got some Web Component Tester. We have all these things that as developers that sort of helps make our web component building experience just a little bit nicer overall. But we don't live in a perfect tooling world. Tools evolve, tools change, protocols change, things get faster, things get slower. How does 2016 look for our wonderful world of tools?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to go ahead and say it, if nobody else has said it. I think 2016 is going to be the year of the CLI. Like, if you look at all the projects out there, Angular, Ember, React, everyone is building a CLI in order to kind of black box the amount of tools that are involved with using their particular thing. And in Polymer, I think we're going to probably be heading down a similar route. If you use a project like Polymer Starter Kit today, which is sort of our boilerplate for helping people kind of get up and running with a non-trivial app, if you open the gulp file for that, it's just like, whoa, there's just so much going on. And that's, you know, that's a lot of the feedback that we've gotten from people. I say we spend most of our time on that just fiddling with the gulp file. Most of the bugs, most of the issues are all related to just the build process and things like that. And so what we're planning to do is take a look at you know, things like Polymer Starter Kit and apps that the team has built, apps that myself and Eric have built, and be like, you know, what is sort of a good enough universal directory structure for a Polymer app? And can we agree on something like that? And can we build a CLI that then can really, really leverage that? The CLI sort of knows where you're keeping your elements, or it knows how you're organizing your code. There's a lot of things that it can do for you so that you're not stuck with a gulp file kind of doing all the plumbing yourself of setting up Vulkanize or you know, Uglify or any of that stuff. CLI can just sort of run it. And the other nice thing there is when we want to evolve our process, we can do that in sort of a black box fashion. So if someday Vulkanize gets replaced with something else, you don't really have to know that that has changed. You would still just be running the same command. You'd still just be saying, oh, you know, poly build my app, and it just, you know, it goes and it does its magic. So that's where we're headed. And there's a lot of things that we want to do with a CLI. I mean, definitely like things like Vulkanize, but also like looking into perhaps supporting like ES2015 modules, doing transpilation for you on the fly. So you don't have to set up Babel or anything like that. So you could just go in, you just write your component in ES2015, importing modules, doing all the cool stuff that all the hipsters do, and it'll just work. It'll just like do all the right things for you. So that's our goal, at least, and that's what we're actually actively working on at the moment.
And I'm on board with the CLI vision. I just want to point that out. If you don't like the CLI, I think that you will like the CLI, because it's not necessarily the same sort of CLI tools that everyone used to have trouble with. I think everyone's had that bad experience with the CLI going, I don't understand why you don't work at this point. Yeah. But the CLI today is actually really, really nice for a lot of tools. And it's nice to see that improvements are coming in 2016.
Yeah. And I mean, to expand on it just a little bit, our idea with the CLI is to basically take some tasks that you could, if you wanted to, you could run those libraries from gulp, or you could run them as express middleware or something like that. So if you did need to get in there and do the plumbing yourself, you would be empowered to do that. Ideally, the CLI would be sort of robust enough that for most folks, they would not need to do that. But if they need the escape hatch, it is there. That is another one of our goals. We want to make sure that we don't, you know, lock people out who are like, well, my thing, you know, for whatever reason, doesn't look like the structure that your CLI requires, but I still want to use all of your tools and get a lot of the goodness. So we want to make sure that we're catering to that as well for the folks who you know, are in various build situations where they need that.
With all the things that are in 2016 sort of in the pipe, you know, learning Polymer today is actually really, really awesome. We've got a really consistent sort of things that you do, like Polycast, which are awesome. If you haven't watched Polycast, it's on YouTube. We'll make sure to get a link out there. You've also done things like the Polytechnic Code Labs that you and a whole bunch of Polymer folks have mostly put together. What are some of the things that developers sort of miss at the beginning when they start to learn about Polymer?
So I kind of touched on this a little bit before. Like, I think a lot of folks, they start using the elements, and they're like, oh, this is it. It's these elements that they've created, all the stuff in the catalog. And then if an element doesn't do something for them, they're just like, I am I'm stuck now. I cannot use Polymer. So one of the things that I really, really, really want to try and encourage folks is to, I mean, look at the elements as a useful thing that exists that, you could, you know, use if you would like. But by all means, like, you know, write your own elements. And, you know, if a Polymer element does something that you don't like or, you know, doesn't do something that you like, you can always just like crack open the source and kind of make your own version, right? Just sort of like a modified version of a button that maybe does fewer things or does a particular new thing that you would really like to add. So yeah, just thinking of Polymer just as a tool and not necessarily like the set of components that have been built. So I think that's one important just thing to kind of like have in your head before you start out. And then the other thing is we built this tool that not a lot of folks know about, but we recently put it together. It's called PolyGit. And if you just go to polygit.org, right now it's going to do a temporary redirect to polygit2.org. But we're basically working with our domain folks here at Google to finalize on the name. That's like a little CDN, and it's not meant to be used for production or anything like that, but it's really great for things like JSBin or CodePen. And I think, you know, what is useful for folks is if you're, for instance, running into a bug or something like that, use PolyGit, put together like a little JSBin or a little JSFiddle, and then come join us on our Slack channel, which is at polymer-slack.herokuapp.com. We can probably put a link in our show notes or something. And yeah, be like, hey, you know, I'm stuck on this thing, and here's the JSBin or here's the JSFiddle sort of showing my problem. Because and the same for filing an issue on GitHub. Because having those reproducible test cases are so beneficial. I mean, it makes it so much easier on the folks that are trying to debug you or the engineers that are trying to fix that particular GitHub issue if they have the test case in hand and they can just go and you know, quickly sort it out versus trying to sort of infer what's going on through like a conversation over GitHub or something like that. So yeah, so definitely check out PolyGit if you have a chance.
Yes, and definitely come and hang out in the Slack channel because there's a lot of great sort of conversation happening in the Slack channel where people are sort of exchanging ideas on Polymer and web components and just how to make things work better overall for your applications. Boop. Rob, what have I not asked you that I probably should have asked you that I usually miss?
Yeah, well, you covered Polycast, and that's crucial. That's crucial to my ongoing employment here at Google. So yeah, if anybody hasn't had a chance, go check those out. So it's youtube.com/chromedevelopers. And we have a whole playlist dedicated to Polycast. And if you go there and you like them and you subscribe to the channel, I get to keep making them. So definitely do that.
Please do that. It's a fantastic show that Rob makes.
Well, great. This was amazing. I am really, really excited about this Polymer CLI, and PolyGit looks really great. I'm checking it out right now. Sounds like you guys have a lot planned for 2016. And if anybody wants to, well, everybody should follow Justin and Rob on Twitter. Justin is at Justin Ribeiro, which is R-I-B-E-I-R-O. And Rob is Rob_Dodson on Twitter. Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter @modernweb_. See you around the internet. Fool, you need a teacher. I'm a preach. I'm a sit you down. So stop your git. Shut your fiddle. I'm a push you. Feel my rollback. Sucker, your first line of code needs a node. Constructor, your JS is shot. If it's minified or not, what you write this on, pop, I'ma link you. Watch me.